Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumor Show. Hartley, good afternoon. How's life? How's good the weather? Afternoon.
It's good. It's warm. People are loving our weather updates every week.
Yeah. Well, I got one. I got one for you guys. We're being hotboxed by Canada right now. We apparently Canada's going through some wildfires, which is not great, and I hope everything's going okay, but the wind is bringing it down here, and it's just polluting our air so badly that we cannot go outside without your eyes burning, and like, it smells terrible. It's actually perfectly sunny out, but you cannot see, it just looks like a cloudy day. It's that bad.
Excellent.
So, yeah, wonderful. That's my weather update. Like, I'm looking out and I can barely see anything because it's so like fog, like smog just everywhere. So that's my weather update. It's supposed to be a nice day, but if you guys are also affected by that, let me know. I should be going to New York City. Hopefully this clears up in like a day because they'll get it too. And that's not great. But we're going to be doing a show next week. You won't be in New York. You should. You should come out. We can do one live in New York City, you know?
We should definitely do that one day. I think that a live episode of this podcast is long overdue.
Well, we'll do it in some like historic theater or something.
Yeah.
We have to celebrate. We missed our 200th episode anniversary.
We didn't miss it. We did the episode, but we just didn't note it.
We just
didn't
acknowledge it. Let me rephrase that. We did it. We just didn't talk about it. So
200 episodes. They happened, all of them.
What an anniversary that was. And I really hope that this is a good transition and to our main topic of the 20th anniversary iPhone. And I really hope people don't just ignore that one. And it should be a much bigger celebrated time, don't you think?
I agree. I mean, it is a pretty big deal, 20 years of the iPhone. I think the thing that is one of the biggest questions about this device is what they're actually going to call it with that in mind. Because, of course, when the iPhone X came out, that was for the iPhone's 10th anniversary. But it was not actually the 10th iPhone in any way. The previous generation was the iPhone 7. So we went from iPhone 7 to iPhone 8 and iPhone 10 that came out at the same time. I fully expect next year is going to be a similar situation. And so I guess for the purpose of this discussion, I'm going to call this the iPhone 20. To me, that is what I think this will be called. There is no way that I think this is going to be called the iPhone 19. Apple doesn't like things with nines. It's a bit of a strange thing. It gives you a sense that there's always another model coming. And I don't think they're going to call it really anything else. I imagine this will just be the iPhone 20 Pro. And when asked, why have you skipped to 20? They'll say, oh, well, it's not the 20th iPhone. It's the 20th anniversary iPhone. Mm. And that just gets over it.
Yeah. Do you think they'll do the Roman numerals thing? Two X's?
I think that's unlikely because I don't think Apple really liked how everyone just called the iPhone 10 the iPhone X.
Yeah.
And I think it made me very mad at the time. I imagine it also made Apple very mad because they tried very hard. And I feel for a lot of Apple Store employees through those years that had to make sure they said iPhone 10, iPhone 10S, iPhone 10R. And I imagine that iPhone XX would be even worse. So
iPhone
I don't think they're
X.
going to be doing that again.
I mean, they did go with the XS. They could have just called it the 10S after that.
They could have, but that still was short enough to say. I just feel like iPhone XX gets too confusing. And also, it kind of looks bad, I feel like.
I didn't like it when they did it with the... Yeah.
I don't think it's very good marketing. I think it'd be far more effective to give more of a sense of a generational leap and just call this thing the iPhone 20 Pro, because this is basically the new Pro models. That's the other thing that's slightly confusing when you hear about these rumors, is it almost sounds like a new model that is sitting above the other models in the lineup, and maybe it will be. But the way I read this is that this will be a replacement for the iPhone 18 Pro and 18 Pro Max. I would be astonished if this was on sale alongside iPhone 19 Pro and 19 Pro Max models, to add even more models on those Apple Store tables, as if we don't have enough already by then.
I think next year there's going to be 42 different iPhones that you can choose from.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Steve Jobs would be so ashamed. I don't know. I have a hard time with this because I feel like the iPhone name is, we've talked about this so many times, like I just don't love how ridiculous it's getting with the numbers. iPhone 20 just sounds insane. And I'm like, how long are we going to keep doing this for? But like, I mean, what else
this
do
may
you
be
call
an opportunity
it?
to change the naming up completely. So certainly we've seen that with the iPhone Air. So something that was unexpected about that was, throughout the rumor cycle, we were expecting it to be called the iPhone 17 Air and be regarded as part of that series of iPhones. But it isn't actually a 17 really in any way. And it's not being replaced with the 17 Pro models this year either. And I fully expect that the next model will be the iPhone Air 2. The iPhone Ultra will be the same thing, where next year we will get an iPhone Ultra 2. So I think there is an equal possibility that they just call this something completely different. I don't know what that could be. iPhone, not this, but you can kind of see what I'm going for, like iPhone Studio, where they can the following year call it iPhone Studio 2 or something.
Yeah, we need
and just
to
kind
find
of reset
something.
The numbers right back
yeah,
down.
Yeah, we need to find something where it resets the numbers.
I don't think they're going to go to 21 or 22. I think it's unlikely. I think at that point, if we get to iPhone 23, like what does that even mean anymore? It just sounds like a Samsung device. And I think that Apple will veer away from being perceived to be doing anything that Samsung has done. But also it's just, the problem with numbers is when you get a number two version of a device, like I remember when the iPad 2 came out and it felt like a big deal and Apple really hammered home the extent to which that was a second generation device and it felt like a big overhaul. I fully expect it will be the same with the iPhone Air 2 next year. And that's all well and good when you're in single figures. And we've been doing fine through the teens broadly. But the more it goes on, the more you just get a sense of this is a very transitory device. This is a device that is set to be replaced in the not too distant future. I mean, we've talked about this before, but there's just like, they're never going to get to iPhone 33 or whatever it may be. It's just not going to happen.
I don't know if I'm going to make it to iPhone 33 at this point. Hey guys, just want to take a quick break to let you know more about this episode's sponsor, Shopify. If you've been kicking around a business idea, but keep telling yourself you'll get to it someday, Shopify is a great way to finally make it happen. Everything you need to start selling is there from day one, so you can spend less time worrying about the technical stuff and more time building something you're actually excited about. One thing I really like is that Shopify has already figured out the checkout experience. When your first customer is ready to buy from you, Shopify checkout helps more people actually complete their purchase. And when they come back, their information's already saved. So it's just one tap and they're done. The best part is that while Shopify handles the setup, the payments, and all the behind the scenes work, you get more time to focus on growing your business instead of managing it. Whether you're selling products, merch, or turning a hobby into something bigger, Shopify gives you the tools you need to scale when you're ready. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business. So go make it one. So start your free trial today at shopify.com/Mac. That's shopify.com/Mac. Again, start your free trial today at shopify.com/Mac. Thanks, Shopify, for sponsoring this episode. Honestly.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
I agree with the thing about Samsung, but like also if they're going to do an iPhone Ultra, don't forget that that's Samsung's flagship name. So like it wouldn't, maybe they'll call it the iPhone Edge. That's something that Samsung did, but like we are expecting an edge to edge display. I mean, we should talk about what this design is going to be like because it's the biggest iPhone redesign since 2017, which by the way, still stands. The iPhone X or the iPhone X, Hartley, is still my favorite phone that has come out in however many years. I would say this last model is probably second, in my opinion, since like basically iPhone 10 on up. What about you? What do you think?
I agree. I think that this anniversary iPhone really will repeat what we have, the iPhone 10 story. Effectively, that is what is rumored, and it will repeat it in many ways, not least because it's an anniversary model, but also just in terms of what this device will do. So this should be the first true new form factor within the iPhone main iPhone lineup. The foldable doesn't really count because I'm counting that as a foldable. I'm talking just about the slab phone. This will be the most dramatic change to that since the iPhone X, or it should be. And there have been some significant changes. I mean, by all means, if you hold an iPhone X next to an iPhone 17 Pro, they do look quite different. You know, we've got the aluminium unibody. We have that huge camera plateau on the back and the triple camera away. We've got the dynamic island, and we've got the flat edges compared to the curved edges. So there are a lot of differences. But what I mean about it being very similar is they both got either a notch or quite a large dynamic island. And I don't think that the change between those two devices, where you have at least a portion of the back being glass and just a front display with slight curvature at the edges, is going to be anywhere near as much of a dramatic shift as this device, which really does seem to want to move in the direction that Jony Ive always talked about, which was this being a single unified slab of glass. So it will go back to a glass back, apparently. And we are expecting this to be effectively a bezel-less device with, at most, just a punch hole for the camera. It may have a completely clear front with no punch holes or interactions on the front of the display. But actually, I think that's probably more unlikely, and we will just get the punch hole. But just a device with a single punch hole and complete edge-to-edge bezels, sort of a display that almost waterfalls down the edges, we haven't had anything like that.
Do we want that, though? That's where I don't know. Do you remember these phones that had, like, these waterfall edges? I hated it. It looks great, but, like, practicality-wise, it was really hard to, like, use without having all those accidental presses and touches and stuff.
But
I don't know how I feel about
Apple's
this.
Very good at palm rejection technology. I'm not so worried about that. And the reality is most people still use their iPhone in a case, and this will be engineered to be able to support a case. I'd be shocked if that wasn't the case. But I imagine that what it will almost be is like a modernized iPhone X style design, where maybe it will go back to titanium or some other polished alloy on the edges. And that will be a very thin band rather than the sort of, I mean, it was quite a thick frame for the iPhone X. I imagine it will become extremely thin with a lot more glass wrapping around on both sides. And I believe that the curvature will also be quite different in some of the rumors that we've seen, that it will almost be like a ramp at the edge of the display. It will kind of roll onto the edges. It won't be a consistent curve. So almost a little bit like the shape of the rear of the iPhone 2G and 3G, or rather the 3G and the 3GS.
Yeah.
So kind of a little bit like a flattened version of that, but on the front, which would be very different. And I mean, we need to see how much these rumors are going to live up to the real expectations of the device. Because it's still early and this thing is not yet in mass production. We have had no leaked images of this. All we have are a multitude of rumors. But right now, that is my expectation. And I do think that the main selling point of this device will be a radically new design.
I think we'll start seeing images in like a month or two after probably the 18 gets released, I would imagine. It's usually when that starts to happen. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a really nice phone. I am curious how expensive this thing's going to cost in terms of manufacturing. You know, who knows how the price increases are going to be from now until next year with all this stuff that's happening. So no cutouts at all. We're finally going to get under display Face ID, because I know there's been, you know, that's what's supposed to happen this year. I'm hoping that's
the
case.
That will happen this year. Okay. But it's like a stepped transition. So
a little bit at a time.
When the notch was introduced with Face ID back on the iPhone X, that was very large. I mean, that nearly spanned the entire width of the device, and it was quite tall. And this saw a little bit of a reduction with the iPhone 12, and then it was the iPhone 13 that really started to shrink it down by putting the earpiece at the top of the frame. And obviously then we had Dynamic Island. So gradually over the years, we have seen that reduce. That will continue. It's not like Apple is going to go from the current Dynamic Island to a completely all display front design. So it is inevitable that one by one, those components will be put under the display. And I think that makes sense. I think Apple's definitely the original ambition would have been for this device to have an all display front. I now don't think that's going to happen. So display analyst Ross Young, who we've had on the podcast, said that probably the under display Face ID won't be ready for 2027. And therefore, it will still have some kind of punch hole. So there is every chance that something is going to persist. I think it will be the camera that will persist, because we are getting the punch hole on the foldable iPhone this year. So Apple is going to be getting us used to how that looks. And I think in reality, you know, we've seen some leaked images. The Dynamic Island is definitely getting smaller this year. I think that that Face ID dot projector is going to move to the top left of the device under the display. But the camera is a whole other matter, because, of course, it does degrade the camera quality when it goes under the display. And that's probably the last one that Apple will want to concede. But even then, just having a hole punch on the front would look pretty different and would free up a lot more space at the top of the display.
And that hole punch stays centered, I'm guessing?
I would imagine so, yes. I mean, with the foldable iPhone, that will be an interesting indicator about that. So my expectation with a foldable iPhone, based on some of the dummy models and things that we've seen, is that the front front cover display will have the punch hole centered at the top, but the inner display will have it on the top left.
Okay. I think that's so pretty much how Samsung does it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think that, you know, for video calls or selfies or whatever it may be, you do really want, or especially on a more traditional iPhone, you would want it in the middle at the top.
I can go either way. Yeah, I mean, I get it. You don't want to degrade the front camera. You don't want to put it under. I don't remember. So when Samsung did that, because they did do it for a generation or two on the foldable, they got the camera underneath the display. It was okay. It was like, you know, you could kind of tell it's still there, but not really. The pictures were not great, but it wasn't terrible. It could have, I don't know. I feel like at this point we've had a few years, quite a bit actually, in between then. And like, has technology really not gotten better to the point where they could figure that out? I guess not. But it just kind of takes away from like, oh, this is going to be a one full slab of glass and it's a waterfall edge and it's completely edge to edge and it's like, oh wait, there's still that little hole punch. Like, it just kind of takes away from the appeal. I don't think it's that big of a deal, but it just doesn't make it sound as appealing and cool as you think.
It makes it feel like less of a dramatic change, but that's why I think it all comes down to quite how much that display really does appear to refract at the edge and waterfall onto the sides. Because if that is by quite a lot, that should be really different. So one of the other rumors about the device is that maybe it will move to haptic buttons at long last. This is something that Apple's researched
years ago
and actually got very close to releasing. I believe it was with the iPhone 15. I don't remember exactly. But there are prototypes out there that have circulated where we can actually see the design of these buttons. I think it was called Project Bongo internally. And Apple got very far with developing this to the extent that it was on prototype devices that are out there in the wild right now. And this perhaps would be the device where it makes sense to finally do that. And there have been rumors about that project being restarted for this device. So that would be another way to really get a sense of this being a dramatic evolution in terms of design.
I guess having buttons like that are fine. I don't really mind the physical buttons. What's the point? Just another thing to like say we did. Like, unless they're going to be able to customize them to do other things, you know,
I think they have to.
Yeah, but like, what would you want the volume buttons to be able to do? Or maybe they act according to whatever you're doing, I guess.
I mean, there's got to be some options here. I mean, if the sides of the phone had sort of touch sensitive edges that you can use with pressure for different purposes, kind of like
Did we like that though?
we did not like that. But yeah, if it
so
was
what's
to be
the point?
Well executed, after many years of research, I could believe it's possible to do something like that. I think that there is also another motive for trying to implement haptic buttons, and that is because iPhone buttons are one of the key points of mechanical failure on the device. Yeah. So a lot of AppleCare repairs relate to buttons that have got stuck, and you know, it's not something that they can just fix with software or let some AppleCare engineer remotely use your device to try and fix something, or you can't do a factory reset. It's something that is a physical moving part and would probably reduce a lot of repair costs. So I imagine that's one reason.
Yeah, I'm sure the buttons fail more frequently than something like a haptic button would. But if the haptic portion ever goes out, good luck. The repairability for that's probably a lot worse or more expensive. I'm just guessing. I don't know.
It could free up internal space. So that could facilitate a larger battery and maybe justify having a better haptic engine, a larger one.
I will say Apple has been better lately with the use of space. Before, I feel like they've done a lot of things in the past where it's like, we've created all this extra space, but then they didn't give us a better battery, or it could have been better, but they didn't. And rumors are, what, for this year that we're getting a pretty big battery inside of the Pro and Pro Max specifically, the Pro Max there. But like, what about the rest of the phones? Like, we can start putting in some bigger batteries in here. So if you're going to be able to save some space and it can lead to bigger battery, then I'm fine with that. I don't know. I think the more I'm getting older and reading about all these rumors, I'm just becoming more of a traditionalist. Like, give me my physical buttons. I don't need an edge-to-edge display. Just give me bigger battery. Make it a thicker phone. I don't care. What else do you really need in a phone? Do you need any of this stuff that's rumored? You personally, Hartley?
I don't need any of it.
Do you want any of it?
I do want the main camera upgrade that's rumored.
Oh, I'll get into that then.
Which is a custom designed Apple sensor.
Okay.
So right now, Apple's iPhone sensors are from Sony. And they're great sensors, but this would effectively be the shift to Apple Silicon or to its C-series modems, but for image sensors. And I think that given how good the iPhone's camera is now, if we were to see a similar step change improvement to what we saw with Apple Silicon with the camera, I think that would be an unbelievably huge improvement. And really makes sense. We're expecting more and more of these components. I mean, we're now getting the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth chip is engineered by Apple, the modem, obviously the silicon. It's a matter of time before the camera sensor, the battery, all of these other components, even the display eventually. I mean, Apple's done a lot of research on its own display technology. Some of those projects have been halted, but I have no doubt that eventually we will get an Apple-designed display. So I'm always happy to see that, and the camera is such an integral part of the device that I think that is something to be excited about. But I do take your point, and it's because the iPhone 17 Pro is such a good device
Yeah.
The cameras on it are so good. There's not a huge amount more you can really ask of it, at least for day-to-day use. The battery life is outstanding. It's got a fantastic display. Even stuff like the anti-reflective coating is really good. And scratch resistance is really good. There's not a huge amount I feel like you can ask for compared to the sorts of things that we used to talk about years ago when we wanted the iPhone to have a USB-C port. Now there's not so much. But I do think that the long-term goal here of reduce the bezels, make it an all-display design, improve the cameras, and change up the design to keep it feeling fresh and as ideally, I mean, if they can make it thinner without sacrificing battery by being more sparing with internals, by using some of that engineering expertise learned about from producing the iPhone Air and the foldable iPhone, then I'm totally in favor of that.
I think my dream phone has now just become, I want an iPhone Air style design with the same cameras from the Pro. It could be slightly bigger than the Pro size, but like try to get it to be the Pro size. But the same battery from the Pro at least has to be inside of that. And I realize that's not probably possible right now. But that I think that's just my dream phone. And I'm like one who's really excited about the Ultra, but I'm very fearful that I am going to use the Ultra for a little bit and then I'm going to not want to use the Ultra anymore and I'm going to switch back to a slab phone. I don't know. I've never long-term used a foldable before. I've used Samsungs, but from a daily basis, long-term, every day for 6+ months, no, because it doesn't run iOS. It doesn't, it's not, you know, that's my biggest thing. So I've been long dreaming for something that can do it. Now it's going to happen. And now I fear that I'm just going to want to go back to being my traditional self of using a slab phone. And I don't know. I think the only foldable that I can see myself sticking around with would be one that basically takes the Pro and folds it in half. And it would have to make sense for that fold in half to be useful. Like it would need to be very easy to pocket. I don't know. I
think that all of these things that we want, we will get, but just probably in the next couple of years.
That's fine.
I think that eventually it is inevitable that the foldable iPhone will address some of the missing features that we've talked about. I mean, it's not going to have a telephoto camera. I think that given that that is available on all of Samsung's high-end foldables and has been for several years, that just makes sense that that eventually comes to the iPhone Ultra. And maybe some of these other missing features like the action button or whatever else this device is going to lack, it will eventually get. And if the iPhone Air is anything to go by, with it getting the ultra-wide camera, a larger battery, and some other improvements to address those missing features next year, by the time we get to iPhones coming out in 2028, 29, I don't know if there'll be an iPhone Air 3. Maybe there won't. I actually think that the iPhone Air form factor will probably become like the entry-level iPhone in the long run. But I just think that it's surely got to be the case that eventually Apple will start using solid-state batteries, denser batteries that enable them to actually ship a physically smaller battery with a larger capacity. Once we start getting things like that, maybe we then can get an iPhone Air-style design with the cameras from a Pro. I mean, you'll still need that camera plateau on there, but who knows what would be possible 5 years from now. It's just that we've kind of got the early stages of all of this stuff, and we've moved beyond a lot of the really basic things that for years it was, oh, I really wish the iPhone would just have an ultra-wide camera of any kind or USB-C. Yeah. But I mean, we've moved beyond that now where we're kind of getting a glimmer of what we could have, and the iPhone Air does feel like that, but it just needs a little bit more.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
I think it's possible with the camera plateau to be gone. If Apple is going to start making its own sensors, you think about Sony's not making it to conform with whatever Apple needs, right? They're making these sensors and they're just given them, and then at least that's my guess.
I think it's still engineered for iPhones specifically, just manufactured by Sony. But I don't think the problem is so much the sensors. I think it's the optics. So I don't know if you remember when the telephoto camera got a big update a few years ago. I don't remember which generation it was. And they talked a lot about the sort of folded prism inside the device.
Yeah.
That takes up a lot of space. And there are limitations on being able to provide an incredible telephoto camera that provides all of that throw and such a lot of clarity, but then also have it be a very thin device, because that you're reaching the limits of physics there to fit those optics into such a thin design. And that is probably something that will take a lot longer to engineer around. So probably the camera plateau is here to stay, but I'm actually okay with that. I'm completely okay with it.
I don't mind it.
On the iPhone 17 Pro, I think it's a good use of internal space. And I think that the phone feels thinner where it's worth feeling thinner. The same on the iPhone Air. I actually like the idea of what the iPhone Air does with the battery as well. Where you can, throw that battery pack on the back if you're going out for a longer day. But then if you're just at home, you're doing your normal day-to-day routine, whatever it may be, you don't need that battery pack. I think that's a sensible vision of the future. I don't think it's actually anywhere near as silly as people say that it is. I think
it's not ideal.
It's not ideal, but I think that, until Apple ships a denser battery, I think that it is the best option to have a device where if you want the extra battery, you can have it. But maybe the solution would be to have a better looking battery rather than a big white plastic thing that is $100 and doesn't come in the box. I think it would be a bit different if it looked a lot more well integrated with the device itself. And also if it delivered a lot better battery life, because while I think when the iPhone Air came out, there was a lot of broad agreement in the tech community that the battery life was a huge amount better than expected. Mm-hmm. But speaking to iPhone Air users 6 months later, it has been disappointing.
Honestly, so has my Pro.
Really?
How has your Pro been?
Mine has been excellent, but
I know it could be the beta. I don't know.
I have the standard smaller iPhone 17 Pro. But you came from a 16 Pro Max, didn't you?
But my initial thoughts on it was that it was fine. Like it was not bad. Yeah, obviously it's not the same in terms of battery life, but like the drop off wasn't bad, and I was able to live with it. But I would say I'm having a hard time pinpointing whether it's been the last month, and so basically since I installed the beta on my phone, or if it was happening before then. But I am noticing that like drop off early in battery life. Like it goes from 100 to 75.
That's what always happens a couple of months before a new iPhone comes out.
Very quick. Well, all right. We're
running new software on it. The battery is degraded by then.
Yeah, let me see.
Throttling is taking place at that point. So it's it's inevitable. But what I will say from my experience is I had an iPhone 15 Pro and the battery life on it was shocking. It's one of the worst battery life experiences on an iPhone that I have ever had on the smaller 15 Pro. I went to the 16 Pro, which was a huge improvement over that, and it was no longer running out by the end of the day. And the 17 Pro is probably the best battery life I have experienced on an iPhone going back at least maybe 5 years, maybe even a little bit more than that. I remember maybe when I had an iPhone XS Max, that was probably a little better. By this time in the year, but I don't think so. I think that really the iPhone 17 Pro has delivered fantastic battery life for me, and if the iPhone 18 Pro has a bigger battery, as is rumored, and we're expecting efficiency improvements with that new chip, and of course the new modem as well, although maybe not for you if it's not in the US, but it will be for me in Europe, then that is where we need to be. And going into the iPhone 20, if the battery continues to get larger, we get further efficiency improvements because, of course, we're expecting the A21 chip, which will then be a second generation 2-nanometer process, even more efficient. probably a new modem that will again be even more efficient. I think that the battery life, we will start to get into a territory maybe where battery life will not be a major consideration. I mean, I don't feel like it is in the way that it was years ago. Like when the iPhone 6 was around, I mean,
yeah.
Multiple times a day was normal. Now, if you're fully charged, if you charge your device overnight, you can absolutely go through until the evening.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's ever a time where I'm like, if I don't charge, I'm going to lose. Like, I don't know if I've ever actually ran out of battery in my life. Maybe there's been one time, but like realistically, there's always a point where I'll either make it or I've been able to find a charger for a little bit. And now they charge so fast that it's really not that big of a deal. But and so on the wish list was a 6,000 milliamp hour battery. And with that said, talking about battery life and giving some battery away, do you ever think reverse wireless charging will be coming? Is that another feature for this?
I think that it has to eventually. I mean,
or at least just for like limited things like AirPods.
Even if it's just AirPods.
Yeah, or your watch.
One of the things that I thought was a little bit of a shame was going back to the iPhone Air's MagSafe battery pack, which I did not expect to be talking about so much on this episode, but here we are. That does not support reverse wireless charging.
Of course not.
As far as I know. Maybe I'm getting that wrong, but last time I looked, as far as I remember, that does not have reverse wireless charging. But the original MagSafe battery pack did. So every iPhone does have that capability there where you could just plug in your iPhone and it would charge the battery pack up.
Yeah.
So in theory, we've had it. But it's just never been enabled for anything else.
It's not the same way with, you know, what Samsung does, where you literally can just put anything on the back of it, any Qi device, and it will charge. Another phone, another watch, AirPods, it doesn't matter, anything. And so why we haven't gotten that, and Samsung's had that for like at least 5 years.
I think
years.
It's because it's not very efficient and it requires very specific alignment. And I think that Apple probably thinks, well, you know, the MagSafe magnets inside AirPods don't line up with the back of an iPhone because they're both designed to attach to chargers. They're not designed to charge each other. And so that will mean you won't get a good alignment and therefore it won't charge very well. That probably is part of their thinking, but also the battery life on iPhones is good. I don't know if it's good enough to be charging other devices very much. And maybe that is something for further down the line where we do have larger, denser batteries and you may want to hand some of that off. I mean, on that point, I still am annoyed that we don't have Qi wireless charging for the Apple Watch. Because right. That is also, in theory, there. I mean, when the AirPower came out, although, wait, it didn't come out. When the AirPower was announced.
Yeah.
They showed the Apple Watch being placed on that device in any location and it would charge. And that was Qi charging. And that means that the technology was in the Apple Watch. And I assume it still is, but you just can't place an Apple Watch on a Qi charger. And I find that infuriating because it means that you do always have to take an Apple Watch charger with you when you travel. Why I can't just take a normal Qi charger and charge all of my devices from that seems crazy to me. But I think that it's because Apple's now got in the situation where they don't actually really want you to be using Qi. They want you to be using MagSafe.
Right.
And you can't charge an Apple Watch with MagSafe, so therefore you have to use an Apple Watch charger. And that's why they've kind of now gotten to the situation where you can charge AirPods with either. And it's a little bit of a mess. But I think that maybe at some point we are overdue getting a second version, a redesigned version of MagSafe for the iPhone that would maybe allow AirPods to snap onto the back of an iPhone that would allow the Apple Watch to charge via MagSafe, maybe with a little dimple in the middle of the MagSafe puck so that the Apple Watch can line up nicely. Something like that would be really nice to see eventually, but I don't think that we're going to be getting anywhere near that kind of thing on the iPhone 20.
It would at least be helpful. I mean, just even if we could charge for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, it's super helpful to get that just a little top off. On the battery pack, real quick, What's going on with like cases these days? Remember how cases were like, you know, Apple made that official kind of like charging case. I'm surprised we haven't come up with a better version of that. Those were horrific looking, by the way. I mean, they got the job
done.
They
were horrific looking. I mean, I just don't know why they didn't release a sort of universal battery pack, the same one that the iPhone Air has, but let me put it on my Pro iPhone. I would have bought that. Easily, I would have bought that. I mean, I regularly use all of my Anker magnetic. I mean, they're not actually MagSafe. I think one of them is G2 battery packs. I use them all the time. If I had one that could integrate with the battery widget and selectively pull some of that juice through to the iPhone as it needs it, as it does on the iPhone Air, I would absolutely buy that. That seemed like such a missed opportunity, but it's because they wanted to get that perfect alignment under the camera plateau, exactly edge to edge on the device. And it's because I believe it is literally the same battery. It is a one-to-one, the same battery inside the iPhone Air. But I think that it would be a shame to not have a first-party battery option in the future, because MagSafe has kind of gone the way of the Apple Watch in a lot of ways, in that the Apple Watch debuted being that fashion-oriented communication device. That's how they pitched it. And it has now become a very inexpensive fitness tracker and really presented totally differently. MagSafe's kind of gone the same way, in that it was presented initially as an ecosystem of accessories, where you had the MagSafe Duo travel charger, you had those weird leather pouches that you could see the time through. All of the cases, of course, still do have MagSafe built in, but that was a big part of the appeal. And they made much of the MagSafe pucks that you could buy on a cord. I never see those now. I never see anyone use those. And it feels like the whole ecosystem of those accessories has just become purely third party and has actually not become officially MagSafe. They are either G2 or they are some other MagSafe but not MagSafe option. They're not allowed to call it MagSafe. And I feel like that's such a shame, because there should be so many things that Apple should be able to provide with a first-party experience. And I don't know why none of those accessories have been updated.
It's a shame because it's also my most used accessory. Like when I travel, I need some sort of, it's not MagSafe, but you know, one of those like 3-in-1s, 2-in-1s. I use those all the time. At home, I have a dock. And I use it all the time. It's really important to like my overall setup. I do not use cables if I can. I don't know. I hope they don't get rid of it, because I mean, I don't think they will, but like, it is a great feature to be able to have that.
And other companies are doing it too. It's a third party thing. And I think that Apple has a tendency sometimes to, with a lot of accessories, I think it kind of says to itself, well, if Belkin can do this just as well as we can, there is no point in us flooding the market with a different option that's actually going to be the same. I think they prefer to only do things when they think they can offer a distinctive or unique experience. Something like AirTag, where it's got that ultra wide band, it's got the integration directly in Find My, precision finding, that easy pairing. That is a very distinctively Apple experience. It doesn't feel like a third-party accessory per se.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Apple had the possibility of doing that with AirPower. The key to this is, whenever you introduce something new, quote unquote, or like new for your iPhone, and it could be something that could be taken over by Belkin or Anker or whatever, you have to introduce your first party option right then and there when you introduce the feature, which they tried to do kind of with AirPower, but it failed. But like, that was going to be the revolutionary thing, because we still don't really have a wireless charging mat where you can, in theory, place it anywhere and it doesn't matter and it's going to charge the same no matter what.
But
I know
I'm
companies
okay.
have tried.
I'm okay with that not being the case, because I think that I actually quite like the reliability of MagSafe. It's very good for docks, bedside chargers, that kind of thing. But it's just, I feel like it's in need of iteration, and I feel like it's in need of some more first-party accessories.
Right. What I'm saying was they should have introduced something at the time. Like, here's MagSafe for the iPhone. Here's our MagSafe dock. And they did, but it wasn't
But then they discontinued it all. Even, like, the MagSafe battery was, yes, it had a terrible capacity, but the software on it was good. And to just have a battery pack that has that integration would immediately pull a lot of buyers toward that. And they've done it with the iPhone Air. Just produce the same thing for the Pro iPhones, and I will be first in line to buy that. And you could go even further. There's got to be other things that they are able to do. I mean, the iPhones have NFC in the MagSafe of the cases to show what color they are, so that it shows the correct color when you put it in the case, and then it will also let you match your wallpaper to the color of the case. That's a pretty cool little feature, and it shows what things they are able to do. But it's so minor, and it just feels like there's been such a step back, even in just in terms of cases. I mean, you know, we've had fine woven and then tech woven. I don't think the tech woven cases are very good.
Terrible.
I mean, they're definitely more durable, but I think they're ugly. I think they're bulky. And I don't think that Apple of 10 years ago would have put out anything like the tech woven case. So I guess what I'm saying here is I've gone from rambling about the iPhone 20 to now rambling about accessories, but I may as well finish my ramble and say I think that Apple needs to kind of reinvigorate its lineup of accessories, including its case and even its Apple Watch bands, which have largely still all had the same designs for years. And I think that we could really do with some fresh options there.
I think Apple's too hard on itself. You're probably right when you say that they don't think that if they can't do it better than what Belkin or Anker are doing, then what's the point? I think they're underestimating the fact that people just like the first party nature of it, knowing that it's made by Apple and that it's Apple's official one. And if I walk into an Apple store, how many times have we said we liked the way they display their own phones and you can't buy that dock? Like, just let me buy that dock. I want that. I want the dock. It charges. I mean, they make one, unless they're just taking stripped down Belkin version, because they kind of do look like that. But like, I would buy that in a heartbeat. Whatever they use to charge up their phones and display them on display at the Apple stores, I would buy that. So I feel like sometimes it's okay to just make a simple version, but it's the fact that it's Apple's version, people will still buy it.
And I would like to see even just some of the things that we heard about with AirPower, where you got that nice animation and you could see your other devices charging right on the lock screen. I mean, I know you can get the battery widgets now, but I actually can't see all of my devices on that. And I would like, if my MacBook is charging, to be able to actually see that in my battery widget. Just little things like that, little quality of life improvements. And this was the kind of thing that I feel like Apple was fantastic at years ago. The attention to detail, the tiny little features, the little things like color matching the case, like I just mentioned. I feel like a lot of that is lost now. And it would be nice to kind of re-inject some of that fun and attention to detail. And accessories are a really good place to do that. I mean, a lot of third-party battery packs will use terrible, bright LEDs to indicate how charged they are. I'm sure Apple could come up with a more elegant solution of the nice sort of pulsing, soft LEDs, little things like that that just make it feel like a better experience.
Well, we're going to have to wait a year. This year's iPhone is rumored to be pretty standard, solid, minor upgrades, really. So going to be kind of boring, basically. But next year is the year that we get all the stuff that we just talked about. And maybe some of the things that we rambled about, some updated accessories would be nice. Let us know your thoughts, what kind of accessories you'd want updated, how you feel about this 20th anniversary iPhone. That's going to be a waterfall edge. Maybe they'll bring back Johnny Ive just for this, one voiceover that we need.
Given the latest lawsuits, maybe not.
I don't think so. Maybe we'll call it the iPhone XX. I don't know. That sounds the iPhone 20. Let us know in the comments what you think, and we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.